overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
Thank you so much. You know, it was Goethe that said, if you see someone and you label them, you limit them. But if you see them and you see the potential, the beauty in them, you're calling it forth. So thank you for that beautiful Karen Drucker song to remind us that what we see in the world is a projection of our own mind. So if you're seeing the struggle and the bitterness and the ugliness, there was a young man named Sun, he was maybe 15, 16, and he said, a happy person will see beauty in the same place that an unhappy person sees ugliness. And then he said, I am beautiful, you are beautiful, the whole existing universe is beautiful. Ugliness is a manifestation of unhappiness. Now, I heard that when I was an old man of 22. He was young at 15, and I realized this young 15-year-old was teaching me. He was showing me the way that I project my perception onto the world. So it's inherent in all of us to see the good and call it forth, and it has to start right there within us. So that's what this teaching is truly all about. It's not about dealing at the level of effect. Surely if there is an issue out there, Jody just rescued a dog. I saw it on Facebook today, a German shepherd, and he was tied to a something or other, and it just broke my heart. You know, he has heartworm, he has a tumor, and Jody said he's the sweetest dog. And of course, I'm sitting there crying, and I'm not supposed to be crying because I had cataract surgery this week, and when I start to cry, then I want to wipe my eyes, but I'm not supposed to touch my eyes. Who's got a hanky? I'm supposed to dab them. Doesn't anybody have a dabbing device? A dabbing device? Thank you. No. I usually would use my shirt. Thank you. Thank you. A dabbing device. Yeah. I had cataract surgery on my left eye, and I was born with a thing called amblyopia. In essence, I'm blind in my left eye. And when the cataracts got bad, the doctor said, you need to have them done. So the surgeon who said, let's start with your lazy eye, and we'll do that first. And when that's okay, then we'll do your good eye. So Wednesday morning, they did the operation on the eye that essentially was blind. And after the surgery, they gave me the eye chart. Now, when I was a little boy, I was so embarrassed that I had this problem, I would memorize the eye chart. So I was trying to fool the examiner. Now I realize that this was not really a good thing, but you know, I was a kid. And so after the surgery, they put the eye chart up, and I couldn't even read the top one on the eye chart. I read the top one. I read the second one. I read the third one. I read the fourth one. And that was, then it all turned kind of blurry. So when the doctor came in and said, how are you doing? I got out of my chair and I went and I threw my arms around him, just like with Dr. Krasnow. I said, oh my God, I can see now. And then I'm crying and I'm wiping my eye, and he says, don't wipe your eye! Have I taught you nothing? You know, you just had the surgery 2 hours ago and you're wiping your eye. So he said, you dab. And I said, well, I'm just crying because I'm so grateful. So anyway, you learn. And so I asked Teresa to sing that song, I Can See Clearly Now. I can sort of, but the trouble is I can see somewhat clearly out of the blind eye, but when I put my glasses on, it's all a blur because these have the prescription. So it's just a kind of a catch-22, so I'll still look through the good eye and dab a little bit, and hopefully I don't mess the surgery up. Yeah, I know. I'm talking about the authentic self today, and to live from that authentic self. Early on in ministry, I started in 1989, there was a man named Gary Zukav who wrote a book in 1989. It was called The Seed of the Soul. Anybody read that wonderful book? Oprah Winfrey went crazy about it. He became her hero. She keeps the book by her bedside table. He's been on her show maybe 20 times. And in that book, he talks about the necessity of moving from the five-sensory, externally-oriented self, who's all about the outer, to find this authentic self. You might call it the soul, that exists within all of us, that eternal aspect of our being that we all too often forget. Seamus said the line he loves from the Bible the best is, "Perfect love casts out all fear." The line that I like the best from the Bible is, "What does it profit man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul?" So what is this thing called soul? And so Gary Zukav had the courage to write about it in that book. And we don't identify with the soul. And he says, when you're living in authentic power from your authentic self, you put your personality in service to your soul. It's that simple. So we all are an egoic personality who has a birth and a death and this particular lifetime. But that exists within an eternal part of ourselves, which we could call soul. And a soul that perhaps lives lifetime after lifetime after lifetime to try to get it right. And I would suggest you try to get it right in this lifetime, or you may have to come back in a karmic sort of way, and I'm not going to tell you what that might be. You know, just a little bit of a scare there. I think it's good for the soul. You know, when they say perfect love casts out all fear, that doesn't mean you get rid of fear. That means that that love embraces that fear. Because there's still a little fearful boy who went in under the knife of the surgeon on Wednesday, and they asked me if I'm allergic to anything, and I said to the anesthetist, "I'm only allergic to some people." And she said, she kind of looked like you, Nikki. She said, "Oh, I found my favorite patient." And so, and then we talked about our kids. I said, "I only have the four-legged," and she said, "Oh, I have the best dog." And I said, "No, I have the best dog." And then the other said, "Oh, no, I have the best dog." And we're talking dogs. And so as she's putting this stuff into my arm, we're, she's kind of smiling and looking at me, and we're talking about her Labradoodle. And the next thing I know, there's a light show going on in my eyes. And it's like, just lights everywhere. And then I felt this cool something or other. And then things became clear. And then you're in la-la land. You don't know what's going on, and you have to walk yourself out of there. And I learned later on that that they were putting a lens in my eye, something that could see clearly. And what if it was that simple? Just something inserted in your eye, and you could see life as it really is instead of the way you used to see it. You know, I used to see, and my teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, says there are two kinds of people. Those who believe life is something that's a battle that we have to fight against, and those who believe that life is here for us. So what if just by putting a different way of seeing it, we could realize that everything is truly here for us, especially the stuff that's challenging, so that we can meet it with an equanimity. It's here for us not to fix it, but to be able to step into it. So my little dog Speckles, who made her transition, was the most fearful, troubled little dog on the planet. And I knew that I was never, ever going to be able to get her fear under wraps. In fact, it got worse with age. But the more fearful she would get, the more loving I would get. And since she made her transition, my big dog, Bert, never had any of the issues that Speckles had. But then when she left, all of a sudden, he has her issues. When there's a thunderstorm, he comes up and he's afraid and he wants to be in the bed. He never had that. He shakes when he hears the things and he sits in the chair, and I've lost baby Speck's thunder shirt, so I decided I have to be the thunder shirt, and I put one arm around Bert and then the other arm, and I just hold him as he shakes in fear, letting him know that he's loved. So what if life gives you these things, not as a problem to be fixed, but an opportunity for love? Jack reminded, it's an opportunity for love when you see something out there that looks askew. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to make it go away. I don't have to take it personally, but I can step into it with a sense of my authentic self. So what is that authentic self? This whole series was inspired by a little book called Richard Rohr, and he's a Franciscan monk who talks about the contemplative life. And he says, when you live the contemplative life, you're not living in a reactive sort of way to the world. You know, several people spoke in the revealing service about not watching the news because the tendency is to want to live in that reaction. But if we could turn off the news long enough, we might find that there is something within us that is peaceful and that is always there and that waits upon us for our attention to turn to it. You know, just like baby Speck waits for that when she's upset. So see if my eyes can focus on this. He says, moving from ego consciousness to soul awareness. He says, when you meditate consistently, a sense of autonomy and your private self-importance, what you think of as yourself, begins to fall away. The me person, the temporary phenomenon called the ego, which is going to be here for a period of time, it falls away. Ajahn Shanti says, when the will falls away, then it's like the Lord's Prayer, not my will, but thy will be done. Could we live a life where we're not willful about it, but we're surrendered? As I'm lying on the gurney waiting for this very long procedure, you're lying there for an hour before they wheel you in for the knife. And the laser thing. And I found a new definition for patience. You know, they say patience is the last step to enlightenment. You never want to treat for patience, or you'll be given opportunities to be patient. But I did find this beautiful definition of patience, which is something I'm working on, and I'm giving it to you as a gift. True patience, which is what the authentic self has, is a wholehearted acceptance of what is. A wholehearted acceptance of what is. Did you hear that, Serena? A wholehearted acceptance of what is. So things happen when they happen. I don't have to make them happen any faster. The will wants to make them happen faster. The ego wants it now. And what if peace on earth is going to only happen when we find peace in our hearts? And it has to start right there in your heart and in my heart. And the first thing is, Terry reminded me, we can't take anything personally at this time. You know, the Hopi Indians, they did a prophecy. And in this prophecy, you know, prophecies are something that are meant to be taken at a subjective level, not an objective level. In other words, it's not literal. It's something that's to work on your soul. And in this Hopi prophecy says, we're all flowing down this river called life. And at this stage of life, it's very important that you keep your head above water, that you don't look back, and that you look forward. Notice who's in the water with you, and notice who's on the shore, clinging to that which they think. And we're moving ahead. And it said, it's very important at this time in our culture to take nothing personally. Nothing personally, because you are the ones that we have been waiting for. So this is this Hopi prophecy that's happening right now, and we are the ones that we've been waiting for. Not to be the me that's willful and reactionary, and what he calls from the binary mind. The binary mind is the one that says, this is good and this is bad and this is what we should do and this is what we shouldn't do. You don't have a clue, let me tell you. You truly do not have a clue. Neither do I. Let me just give you what my Zen calendar said today, and I thought it was so appropriate, but it's marking the book, so I guess I can't. Okay, forget the Zen calendar. That was my will trying to operate here when it's not supposed to. Okay, it falls away little by little as unnecessary and unimportant and even unhelpful. This imperial eye of me, the self that you likely think of as your only self, reveals itself as largely a creation of your own mind. My thoughts, my opinions, my beliefs, my conclusions, all of it's an illusion. All of it's a construct from your mind. And if you live to be as old as I am, you'll realize it will change, it will change, it will change, until you realize, I don't have the answers. Could I live in uncertainty instead of certainty? The me wants certainty. The soul is willing to leap into the water and let life take it where it will. So he goes on to say, Richard Rohr, through regular access to contemplation, you become less and less interested in protecting this self-created relative identity of me, and you don't have to attack it. It calmly just falls away of its own accord, and you experience a kind of natural humility. Jesus had that when he said, I of myself do nothing. I'm nobody. It's the Father within that does everything. Wow. Then you don't have to be the doer in your life. You can be the beer in your life. You're not a human doing, you're a human being. And as that, you don't have to fix the world. He says, if your prayer goes deep, invading your unconscious, as it were, your whole view of the world will change from fear to connection. From fear to connection, because you don't live inside your fragile, encapsulated me self anymore, nor do you need to protect that part of you. In meditation, you move from this egoic consciousness to the soul awareness, from being fear-driven to being love-drawn. And it is, in a few words, of course, you can only do it if this someone else, this big someone else, let's call it the soul, the oversoul, spirit. You can only do it if this someone else is holding you, taking away your fear, doing the knowing, and satisfying your desire for a great lover. The love you're looking for is not out there. Remember, it's never out there. It's always within. So the great lover you're looking for is in here. This great something has always been loving you. Seamus did that in the revealing service. We are loved so much by this something, and as it, not only does it love us, but it loves through us because it's what we are. We're all the same love. You see it in your animals. I saw this movie called My Dog Skip the other day. I'd seen it before. And it's all about a little boy who was an only child, didn't have siblings. And he was raised by this little dog named Skip. And Skip became the love of his life because the soul in Skip saw the soul in the little boy. And when the little boy got college at Oxford, he left his little southern town, and Skip was so bereft that he went and he laid on the kid's bed and died of a broken heart. And I'm sitting there boo-hooing and dabbing my bad eye all yesterday because that's what love is. Okay, the great lover. If you can allow that someone else to have their way with you, you will live with a new vitality, a natural gracefulness, and inside of a flow that you did not create. This is called the life of the Trinity spinning through you. Remember, he's a Franciscan monk, so he's going to call it the life of the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit as a whole. Now, Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas says this profound thing. He says, you can kill the Father, and you can kill the Son, and you'll be just fine. But if you kill the Holy Spirit, ye shall die. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So if you take the whole gestalt, it's not the idea of a supreme power. You get rid of that. We have God in the sky. It's like Santa Claus. It's time to grow out of that one. And then the Son is the form. The form changes. Skip died. The ones we love die. But the Holy Spirit is this eternal life that never dies. And when we know ourselves as that eternal spirit, then something can truly awaken within us. So Gary Zukav, I listened to his latest. He just, it's 30 years since he wrote Seed of the Soul. So he was on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday. And I watched the clip of him and her over the many years, the 30 years since he's known her. And he was on her show, I think, 16 times. On the eighth time he was on her show, something very profound happened. A young mother had twins. And they were twin boys. The one boy, Ryan, lived only 4 days. And he died of SIDS. But the other little boy lived. And the mother and father were bereft. How do I get over the death of my child? So they were on the Super Soul thing with Oprah and Gary Zukav. And he said to them, your son Ryan, if you think of him as the personality Ryan, as the ego Ryan, then your other little son will grow up and he'll always be compared. Ryan would be graduating from high school now. Ryan would be getting married now. Ryan would be doing this. And that is way too big a burden to place on your living child. But if you see Ryan as an eternal soul that came maybe just for 4 days, but his soul chose you for those 4 days, then you can claim the gift of Ryan because his soul is still here. His ego, his personality, it only lasted for 4 days, but the eternal part of him is still here. So as I was listening to this woman and this man and Zukav explaining it to her, I thought, he's speaking the truth. Could we know ourselves as a soulful being? And that really is the challenge for all of us. Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind talked about involution and evolution, and he talked about evolving into this realization that we are love itself. And he says, and when love awakens, he says, then you realize that love will see only love in the world because we see our own projection of ourself, and only this love sees love. So it's time to find ourselves at that nexus where this love awakens, where this love flowers. And I love that idea of flowering because that's what Ajahn Shanti says. He says the love that you are actually flowers within your soul. Isn't that a beautiful image? You know, I love Tia's paintings because they all look like that thousand-petaled lotus that's opening. So how open is your heart? How open is it to love with unconditional love, that it can love everyone with equanimity? It just doesn't love the people that it likes. It can love a beautiful sunset as you're driving home from class. I drove home from class last Tuesday night, and I came home, and Trey was all in a dither because Humphrey was climbing the stairs. That's my one-eyed pug. And he got to the top of the stairs, and his legs gave out. And he tumbled all the way down the stairs. And Trey thought this was it. I shouldn't be telling these stories. I'm going to be dabbing my... Anyway, he tumbled down the stairs. And because he's such a little butterball, he wasn't hurt. He just kind of rolled like a little sausage ball down to the bottom of the stairs. And yet, you know, you have to be very careful and conscious because it is still a life form and you want to be very mindful. He's afraid to go down the stairs since he had the surgery. He only has the one eye. So he'll sit at the top of the stairs and bark. And he's kind of a heavy little guy. So it's like lifting a big sack of potatoes. But we'll climb the stairs and he demands it and you scoop him up in your arm. And then you got to be careful that you don't fall as you're carrying him down the stairs. And it's part of the dance that we do for each other. The things that love will do is amazing. Gary Zukav. Oh, Oprah Winfrey, when she was sharing with him, she said ever since she met him and she's putting her personality in service to her soul, she said, every now and then I'll find that sweet spot where everything is working, where I'm in congruency. You know, like if I say, I really value kindness, and then I'm actually living a kind life, that's being congruent with your soul. You know, I value freedom. The soul loves to be free. Have you noticed, are you really free in your life, or are you bound by your belief systems? Are you bound by your work? Are you bound in a relationship that's unsuccessful? The soul, by its very nature, wants to be free. How free are you? How in congruency are you with this soul thing? So Oprah called it the sweet spot. She said, every now and then I have it. And he says, the goal of life is to live in the sweet spot, where this authentic self is living this life, where your egoic, reactionary, binary mind isn't operating, moving you from pillar to post. Do I like this? Do I hate that? You don't want to be there anymore. That's the gift of getting older. You want to live in this natural flow where you're surprised at your own unfolding. And then when life gives you a challenge, you say, "Ah, this is here for me. I'm not a victim anymore." That's the real evolution of consciousness. You've heard me speak about the four kingdoms of consciousness. The lowest level, this comes out of Michael Beckwith in California, the lowest level of consciousness is the two-me consciousness, where you see yourself as a victim, where you see them as bad and these guys as good. And, you know, if you're living in victim consciousness, you're in the lowest level. The second, we need to get to at least the second level, and that's the for-me consciousness, where even the things that happen to us are there for you. The heart attack was for me. It really woke me up to the sacredness of every moment of life, that to be listening vigilantly to my body. It was one of the greatest gifts I ever had. Coming into the center, when I said religion is the opiate of the people, and I said I'll never take foot in another church, only to realize that there was something in me that was waking up, that was hearing something new, something waking up. You know, we have a poster out there. It says, Awakening Humanity to Its Spiritual Magnificence. One of the teachers we study here is a guy named Locke Kelly, who comes out of the Buddhist lineage. And he says, the first thing is to wake up. But it's not you that wakes up. It's this authentic self that wakes up. It's this something that we are, that knows that we're not bound by our story or our history or our herstory or our labels or our judgments. We're not bound by that. So this something wakes up in us. That's the first step. Then the second step is to wake inward, to go layer after layer in all the parts of ourself that we've shamed, that we've judged, that we've criticized, that we've devalued. You know, our fearful little self. That fearful little self needs to be loved. It doesn't need to be gotten rid of. You know, your worried self needs to be realized that it doesn't have to worry. There's this lovely little book, someone gave it to me this week. It's called Discovering Your Soul's Signature by a guy named Panache Desai. And he talks about, he says, take a moment to see where you might be spinning your wheels. Remember, this is for me. This is this. And he says, and where you might be stuck in the mud might be the place of your own liberation. So if you're stuck in the mud, he has a thing called your authentic transparency. And he says, as the name implies, it's very, very clear. It isn't subtle. If you recognize that you're stuck in the mud and that the wheel is the spinning place, he says, stop and get quiet. Go deep inside yourself, because the instant of awareness is a sign that you're ready to turn yourself around. Hey, I'm stuck, and I'm aware that I'm stuck, and I can only get unstuck when I have the clarity that I don't want to be stuck anymore. Anybody can hear that? Okay, you're hearing it. Thank you, Michael. And he says, and you will know. You will know. So he says, imagine that there is a house that's been shuttered for several seasons. The family's been away. The sheets are over the furniture. The shades are drawn. The mail is pulled up in front of the house, and you have the key to this house. And he goes on to describe, this house is a total mess. A hoarder lives there. It's covered with dust and dirt. And he says, that's your consciousness. Ooh. So imagine that this house is you, and it's a mess. So he said, there are places inside you that you've neglected, that you've abandoned. There are dirty corners. There are smudges of fingerprints on the walls. There are layers of lint and dust in places that you haven't wanted to look. And here is your opportunity to clean your own house. I had a teacher once that says, you know what your consciousness looks like? He says, look in your car. It's a reflection of your consciousness. Now, not that that's a valid statement, but dirty corners, smudges, and fingerprints. Here is your opportunity to clean the house, to become authentically transparent, and to return yourself to the original beauty and luster that is your birthright. Now, you don't do that by getting rid of everything. He says, there is no part of you that deserves to be neglected or abandoned anymore. So little fearful Freddy, I'm not here to get rid of him. I'm to love fearful Freddy. And little curious Curtis, I'm here to let him know that it's okay to be curious. And worried Walter, all these different parts of ourself that are buried in there, they have a place in our authentic self. So he says, know yourself. Know every single nook and cranny. Know the spider webs and the dust motes, the dark corridors and the rusted hinges. Know your sadness. Know your guilt. Know your secret desires and your shame and your grandiosity and your anger and your passion, Tia. Just as in the imaginary house, as you begin to delicately dust, you uncover the intricacy of the banister and the inlaid pattern of the wood on the floor, and the chandeliers begin to sparkle and catch the light. And so, too, do all of these aspects of you, every last one of them, deserve to be witnessed and understood as beautiful. They, too, are a part of you. The richness and possibilities that become available when you fully embrace all the aspects of yourself are beyond measure. Beneath this dust are treasures that you haven't dared to imagine. Beneath the dust are treasures you haven't begun to imagine. When I was in Colorado last, I guess it was spring, and it was a workshop on shame, 5 days on shame, and I said, I don't have any shame. I don't even know what shame is. Shame? And then after the first session, I realized, my God, I'm buried in shame. From the time I was a little child, I was raised on shame, you know? I was a little boy who would cry, was very sensitive. My twin sister and I were taken to see Hansel and Gretel when we were 5 by my aunt, and she was a very strict aunt. She had you behave and don't talk and sit there in your seat and don't fidget. You know, that was my aunt. And we're sitting watching Hansel and Gretel in the movie theater, and having a twin sister, I saw Hansel and Gretel. They were a little boy and little girl. They were walking into the forest, and they dropped the breadcrumbs so they wouldn't get lost. Very smart. Of course, the bird ate the breadcrumbs, and they got lost in the forest. And then they're eating from the gingerbread house, and the witch comes out. I was so terrified as a 4-year-old or 5-year-old, I was under the seat shaking and crying. And my aunt grabbed my wrist and said, you have ruined this day for your sister and me. And she took us and she marched us out of the theater. Yeah, well, that came up in that, and I thought, well, it started at 4, and then it went on and on and on and on, and all the shame that had been buried was coming to be met with love and with compassion. So here a 70-year-old man was experiencing his 4-year-old little child on this retreat. Thank God none of you were there. And so when they would have breaks, I found myself, they said, and ask that little self that begins to emerge, ask him or her, what do you need, that little child within you? And I asked him, and he said, I just want to be held. But who am I going to go to? There were 400 strangers that I didn't even know. And so rather than to go up to a stranger and say, would you hold me? Because I was like 4 years old. I ran out into the forest in Colorado, and I found the big old oak tree. And I held the oak tree, and the oak tree said, I was waiting for you. I've always been here for you. So the oak tree was holding me, and I was afraid to leave the oak. And then the oak said to my little boy, he says, why don't you take a piece of me? And I picked up a piece of the oak that had fallen, a branch, and all these bugs started crawling out of the branch. And I said, oh, I can't take that. That's your home. So I put the branch down, and right next to the branch was this little rock. And I said to the grandfather tree, can I take this rock that's at your base? And so he said, yes. And so I carried the rock up from the forest into the conference room. And for the next 4 days, I sat there with this rock, as this rock held me, as it let me know that I was okay. That's the authentic self coming to be met, coming to be accepted, coming to be loved. And we all have that. In our class, On the Brink of Everything, I asked the students to bring a poem, and I think it was Dawn that brought the guest house. This being human is like living in a guest house, and come knocking at your door of your consciousness, come your fears, your worries, your anger, your concerns, your anxiety, and it doesn't say treat them away. Invite them in, this is Rumi, because they may be coming to clean your house. And only when you invite them in can we become a whole integrated, congruent being. So, you know, there's a song, it's called All of Me. Why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you? What if we could sing that to the parts of ourselves that we've abandoned and rejected? All of me, why not love all of me? The fearful part, the worried part, the scared part, you know, the uncertain part. We don't have to have all the answers in this world. Oh, here's what the Zen calendar said. The quest for certainty blocks the search for meaning in life. Now, the ego, the personality, wants to be certain and wants to have all their ducks in a row. But he says the quest for certainty blocks the search for meaning. uncertainty is the very condition to impel man to unfold his powers. This is Eric Fromm. Uncertainty. Emerson says, we all seek to be settled, but only to the degree that we are unsettled is there any hope for us. So what if it's about stepping out of the conditioned mind into the mystery of belonging to the universe? What if it's about stepping out of religion? I love that Catherine was saying, imagine no religion. I wonder if you can. Religion is a construct that if it doesn't liberate the soul, it's not worth anything. You know, the Bible was a book that was written many, many years ago by committee. And it starts in a place called Eden, and it ends in a place called New Jerusalem in Revelations. And the consciousness of Eden was a consciousness where everything was perfect until we ate from the tree of judgment of good and evil. That's that binary mind. We moved into the egoic mind, started taking things personally, and started calling this good and this bad. And that's when we fell from grace, and that's when we could no longer live in the garden. Not a literal garden, but the garden represents a state of consciousness. We could no longer be free as universal humans because we were then in this reactionary, judgmental mind. And so the whole Bible is a story of the evolution of consciousness. So Jesus himself came to teach love. And at the very end in the book of Revelations, they say, and the voice within, the voice of Spirit within, the Holy Spirit, said, and behold, I make all things new, and there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And the voice within said, behold, I make all things new. So the new heaven is the new consciousness, and the new earth is what it looks like in your life, the manifestation. And when you have a new consciousness, when you move into the authentic self, you're automatically going to create different relationships, different work environments. Because you're coming from a different place. You're no longer going to see it as a problem to be fixed, to find certainty, where am I going with my life? But you're stepping into the stream and saying, life is living my life. Do with this life as you will, because my soul wants to be free. The soul doesn't want to be in a cage. You know, it wants to fly, it wants to soar, it wants to discover, it wants to be uncertain. And then everything is fresh, everything is alive. You know, I've been in a relationship for almost 50 years with the same person, and it's more alive and more interesting now than it's ever been. Because it's not about sameness, it's about the freshness of this teaching. I've been in this teaching for 30 years. It's more alive and fresh than it's ever been, because it's coming from that new level of consciousness. It's not about manifesting anything. It never has been about manifesting anything. The only thing you ever manifest is you. All you ever get and all you ever see is you. So who are you? Are you the one that you want to live with? Are you creating the life that's worth living? Are you letting this life bring you alive in every way? It's worth entering into the question. So many people seek answers. Stop seeking the answers and just live in the question. Is this life bringing me alive? You know, am I discovering a freshness and a newness in every day when I wake up? Am I taking time to turn off the noise of the world and look at a sunrise that's right out there? Can I stop long enough to see the hummingbirds drinking from the flowers or see the chipmunks running in the garden? Or am I so busy with my to-do list that I can't even stop? Gigi said one of the most meaningful moments when her daughter visited from Germany was they just sat in the garden and they opened their hearts and they looked out at this beauty and how hard it is sometimes to just stop and experience the flowering of our world. And when you see the beauty out there, it's the beauty in you that sees the beauty out there. That's how it works. So live in the question, what are you seeing? Is your life unfolding? Are you flowering? Or are you stuck in the mud? And when you're stuck in the mud, can you say, hey, I'm stuck in the mud a little bit. That's a good thing, because I'm aware that I'm stuck in the mud. Stuck in the mud. Lastly, I pulled out my soul friend, Mark Nepo, because I can just open him up and read him again and again. He speaks to my soul, and he talks about the flowering of the soul. The flowering of the soul. Gary Zukav talks about the power of intention. And when you set an intention to allow the soul to flower, to allow the authentic self to awaken, to embrace the allness of what does it look like? Here's how he describes it from the poetic thing. Now feel into the words, because it's not a logical thing. The soul doesn't work in logic. The soul works in metaphor and pictures. In fact, Gary Zukav described when Oprah said, what is the soul like? She says, well, the ego is like a bunch of little boats, and the soul, the oversoul that Emerson spoke of, is like the mother ship. This big oversoul. And our job as little boats is to steer our boat in line with the mother ship. Remember that when you leave your mother. To align your little boats with the mother ship so you're always aligned with your soul. Again, a metaphor. Are we aligned with our soul? So here's Mark Nepo. He uses it in a flowering sort of way. And he talks about time as a rose. What is time but God undressing herself of her mystery, hour by hour, minute by minute. God undressing herself of her mystery, moment by moment. Or, if it suits you, think of time as the wind of existence moving the pollen of being from one decade to the next. Time is just moving the pollen from one decade, one year to the next. You're still only 15. 15. I knew you when you were 9. I'm 70. 1 year. They go fast, don't they? He says, you can understand time as the unfolding of nature or the working of physics, whatever language works for you. But under all our efforts to name what is unnameable, we're swept along like minnows tucked in the ocean. And while love and suffering let us glimpse the totality of life, it is gratitude that lets us feel our place in the infinite sway of things. It is gratitude that lets us feel our place in the infinite swing of things. To be grateful for even the smallest of things, especially the stuff that's a little uncomfortable, that asks you to grow a little bit, I've discovered. That is why the life of feeling matters. Because just as a whale feels the entire surface of the ocean as it breaches, someone moved to help another feels the entire surface of humanity as their care breaches the ocean of circumstances. I shared with you last week about these two women on the border of Mexico and Texas and how they bring water out. They have a little group called No More Deaths. They don't want any more immigrant children to be found. And so they bring out water and food for those who are escaping their countries. You know? And as I was watching them, tears were coming to my eyes, and I'm blotting this damn thing because I'm realizing I felt the caring of these women for all the children. They're all our children, not just the ones that we give birth to. So he said, as a cocoon tears, as bark peels, as the heart casing that grows fruit splits open, the casing of our pretense and our stubbornness also breaks open, and the soul can then unfold itself like a rose. The soul can unfold itself like a rose to fill the world. This is a fate to be longed for, even though we fear it, to be broken open and let our soul flower. So let's just close our eyes with that lovely metaphor. And place your hand on your heart if you're open to that. And the Buddhists talk about a thousand-petaled lotus that is there at the center of our being. 1,000 petals. So invite that aspect of your soul to open effortlessly. Notice a flower doesn't do it suddenly. It takes time, 1 petal at a time. And as you consciously breathe, you realize that you're not in charge, you're not in control, but you're rather surrendered to this awesome experience of the flowering of your own soul. I invite you to unhook yourself from your thoughts so that you're not thinking and you're just resting your attention on the breath and on the essence of the self that we all share. We can call it love. We can call it awake, awareness. We can call it presence. It's the same presence. Your dogs and your cats have it. The hummingbirds have it. The trees have it. We all share the same presence. It's called life. And this life wants to live. It wants to awaken in time and space in you and me. And placing our hands on that space in our heart, we're inviting this awareness to flower. This soul essence of ourself to be felt, to be known. It's been waiting for us our whole lifetime. And now, just by stopping, we can say, I can hear you now. The noise is gone. I can hear all the obstacles that were in my way. Gone are the dark thoughts that had me blind. It's going to be a bright, bright, awakened, loving, unfolding, amazing, awe-inspired, surrendered and trusting day. Because I have set my intention to listen, to deeply listen to the still small voice, the still small voice of the soul that doesn't get louder but gets clearer when we become still. When I was in Colorado, I was chanting on the hills, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know." Join with me. "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be." Take a deep breath. Give a sigh. I have arrived. I am home in that essence. And all is well.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.